Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, the president of the University of Nevada, Mark Johnson, joins us. Plus on the Power Pundit panel, Robin Reedy, Ernie Adler, and Eric Herzig. It's all coming up next on all new Nevada Newsmakers.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
Safety is the number one priority for the trucking industry. Over $7 billion a year is spent on technology like this electronic eye that will apply the brakes automatically. But the most important factor for safety is the truck driver. These hardworking men and women who safely move over 70% of our nation's freight and 94% of Nevada's. We thank you because trucks move America forward.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Does your business deserve the absolute best in workers' compensation? You should know that not all workers' comp is equal. With Pro Group Management, your business is all that matters. What do you receive for your premium dollar? Professional risk management team, top-rated claim service, customer care team, website access to your full account? It's all in the numbers. You can upgrade your dollars and make them stretch farther and more efficiently. Call us today. You deserve the best. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Closed captioning of Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you by the Nevada Trucking Association. Trucking moves America forward. This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shad, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're always delighted to welcome back to the program the president of University of Nevada, Reno, Mark Johnson. Thank you for being here, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Let me ask you something right off the bat. Your predecessor, Milt Glick, had me come to the university for lunch one day, soon after he got the job. And he said to me, what is the disconnect between downtown and the university? We're so close, and yet the relationship isn't there. Things have changed dramatically since that day to today. What can you tell us about the relationship now between downtown and the university?
I'd say there are two things that have changed. We went through the long recession, and the recession has really steeled people to understand that if we don't work together, then we won't make any progress. And so I think the result of the recession is that many people are working together. Secondly, we have people in the city and people at the university who actively reach out to one another to make this connection between downtown and the university. And it's taken some time, but it's really coalescing now.
My understanding is that the university has an interest in going from the university property as it sits now to I-80 and then leaving I-80 to downtown, which is where the gaming operations are, to private enterprise to develop that. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay. Why?
The reason is that we have been collecting properties for some time, so we want to go ahead and finish collecting the properties so that we have a footprint for the university that moves south and gives us at least a two-block area that we can put additional residence halls and academic buildings. So we want more space. So we think we can control that portion that's very close to campus to make it a contiguous part of the campus. And we think the private sector really needs to make decisions on how they're going to serve a growing student population, a growing business community between the campus in downtown. So that that will happen south of the highway.
I know from friends who have been trying to find accommodations at UNR for their kids for this year, there's not a lot of housing available, and the housing that is available that's private housing is very expensive. How do you plan with the record growth that you're seeing at the university year after year to accommodate this, or is that going to also be private enterprise that has to step in and help?
Well, there are two opportunities here, or maybe three. One is that we have two more residence halls for freshmen that are already on the planning block. We've already hired a contractor and a designer for a new residence hall that will open in 2017, and we have the next plan for another residence hall opening in 2019. We're also looking at the possibility of public-private relationships where we could have a private company come in and finance and build residences for even upperclassmen at that in that territory just south of the campus, which we could probably manage. And then the third would be that with a higher price, that is a stimulant to the marketplace to get private developers to come in and build more housing near the campus. Hopefully some of it will be south of the campus moving in toward downtown.
As you look at Tesla now here, Switch now here in Northern Nevada, with huge facilities, and literally over the next 5 years, and it's not tomorrow, let's make that clear to people, but over the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see tens of thousands of people moving to Reno. Will the university be able to afford to keep building and accommodating this growth, or is there a limit at some point?
Yes, there's a limit at some point. And I've seen in the history of five different universities where I've worked that there is a tendency for some campuses to grow to about 25,000 students, and then they just naturally stop growing there. So you can look at Oklahoma State University, Kansas State University, Colorado State University. So they have a growth spurt, and then they sort of level out at 25,000 students. And that would be a very nice size. It's very efficient, and it would accommodate some additional growth for us, and we have the space to accommodate that kind of growth.
Okay, so would we then be in a situation where we would be like Southern Nevada, where we'd need a state college to be a bridge between the community college and the university?
That's a potential.
Is that being discussed?
It's not being discussed that I'm aware of.
Okay, but that would be an idea that you might be in favor of.
Well, yeah, I think a four-year college that's not necessarily a research university could be a great add. I think four-year education is excellent, and it prepares students for professional work, for graduate school, and the like. I went to a four-year college that was not a research university, and it prepared me well, and I could go to about any school I was prepared to go to.
All right, let's take a break. More with President Johnson when we come back.
Welcome to the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. You ask, are we busy? Here's United Construction, 700,000 square feet of distribution. This is SJS Development. They're Grady for their new facility. This is eBay's new data center under construction. TRI offers 30,000 acres of industrial property. It's ready to build, and there's room for you. Welcome to the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. We're building economic prosperity for Nevadans.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
For help saving energy and money? Soon, new options from NV Energy will help you do both. Learn more at nvenergy.com.
The Tamarack Junction is South Reno's hotspot for food, fun, and friends. Play the hottest slots and video games. Join the Conductors Club and earn comps and free play. Meet your friends at Sully's Sports Bar and feast on juicy burgers, wings, big beers, and all your favorite cocktails. Download the Tamarack Junction mobile app for exclusive food and gaming offers right from your phone. The Tamarack Junction, where friends meet in South Reno, just north of the Summit Mall on South Virginia.
Closed captioning of Nevada newsmakers is brought to you by the Nevada Trucking Association. Trucking moves America forward.
And now, back to Nevada newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with the president of the University of Nevada, Reno, Mark Johnson. So let me ask you this. When we read in the papers and hear on TV and radio news all across the state that we are now developing the workforce and that companies like Switch and Tesla have needs for a certain level of employees, and so it's the university's job, it appears, to get them to that point, and which is all well and good, and that's great, obviously. But does this in any way take away from what was typically the role of a university, which was to give people a very well-rounded education rather than just a specific, you're going to be an engineer, you're going to be a mechanic, whatever it might be?
Really, it doesn't affect it at all, because the students coming in today, we hear from our recruiters, are very, very career-oriented. They see Tesla and Switch coming to town, the drone companies coming to town, and they want jobs in these sectors. We also have a new core curriculum, which provides a broad education for every student that graduates. The university itself is maintaining a balance as an arts and sciences university and a university that will help people prepare for the professions. So we're working on fundraising to build a second arts building to recognize the interest of the students in arts. We have thousands of students who are studying engineering and science who are also wanting to be in plays and choral groups and the band. So, I think we have the opportunity not to be just a workforce preparation place, but a four-year and graduate school place where people can get their professional credentials and at the same time get a broad education. We're also really emphasizing the enhancements of writing and speaking and digital communication skills on the campus, and we're investing more heavily so we can get our writing classes down in terms of numbers per students in a class, and we're developing a writing across the curriculum so that each individual department can work with an English professor to design ways to get more writing communication and speaking communication all the way through the 4 years of education.
It's fascinating you bring that up, because obviously in the last decade there's been a complete change in the way younger people, and now it's moving into the older generations, communicate via Twitter, via text. Email is almost old-fashioned, and if you bring up the word fax, people are laughing at you. How does that play into the English curriculum?
Well, the English curriculum is designed to help people understand how to communicate. They write in many different ways. I think when I first got here, I attended a session of a strategic planning exercise for journalism, and they were trying to argue, this is 2008, are we going to emphasize the story or the medium? And they came up with, we need to make sure that everybody can communicate the message across a whole broad sector spectrum of media. And now they turned into a multimedia place, so they can communicate with Twitter, they can communicate with long stories. So communication, first of all, is to understand how to write and speak and carry a message, and then figure out how to boil it down on the different media.
As you know, that there are folks that were former heads of community colleges across the state who have banded together and are trying to get a bill going through the next legislative session to separate out community colleges from the university system, because they say that they're not getting their fair shake there. What do you think about that?
I don't support the separation. I've been in states where the community college system is separate from the university system, and all you get during legislative sessions is a battle between these two institutions. We're fortunate, I think, in this state to have all of our higher education institutions, except the Western Governors University, being part of the Nevada system of higher education. We work very closely with the Nevada State College, which is the four-year college in Henderson. We work very closely with TMCC and the school district here in trying to smooth the pathway from secondary education to either the community college or the university. So I think if we separated the institutions, you would have heads of institutions that battled rather than sought cohesion and cooperation.
But now, I understand what you're saying, and I understand that the chancellor goes to the legislature and expects his presidents to be in line with what the plan is. Mm-hmm. But privately, there have got to be a lot of fights going on between who gets what in terms of revenue.
I think you will see in this next session a much greater amount of cohesion in the message. True, in the last session, we had a smorgasbord to choose from, and each institution was encouraged to go down and get any piece of what they had on the Regents approved list. I think you will find this time that we'll be much more cohesive in a couple of messages. There's a real interest in having two very high research universities on the campus, just like Oregon has two, Arizona has two. And we will be seeing cohesion in the approach to workforce development for all of the community colleges in the state. So I think we're going to see cohesion.
Last 30 seconds, remedial education. Is that still as big an expense for the university as it has been in the past?
It's a zero expense for the university in that universities cannot charge for or assign resources for remedial education.
But so, don't you have to provide it, though, for people who come out of high school that are not ready for college?
Certainly. We do provide it, but it's offered through extended studies, and the students pay the cost of remedial education.
I guess it's not a cost. I asked the question the wrong way. Is it still a problem? Is there still a big gap between somebody getting their diploma and then arriving at the university?
Certainly, there's still a significant gap. We're running about 25% of our students, or 20% of our students are needing some form of remediation when they come to the university. It's much higher for those students going to community colleges.
Okay, and that's where we got to leave it. Always a pleasure to have you on the program, sir. Yeah. What a wonderful time to be president of the University of Nevada.
It's a great time.
We're having fun. Thank you. We'll be right back.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
Chronic diseases like diabetes,
asthma, and heart disease
are the number one
cause of death,
disability,
and rising healthcare costs
in the United States.
Today,
more than 86%.
86% of our healthcare spending
goes to treating people with chronic diseases.
I'm Ken Thorpe, chairman of the Partnership to Fight Chronic Disease. As the presidential candidates discuss their plans to address rising healthcare costs,
ask them how they plan to address the chronic disease problem.
Paid for by the Partnership to Fight Chronic Disease.
The Pizza Baron is celebrating over 40 years in business, and as a way to thank you, Reno and Sparks, the Pizza Baron is offering 30 wings and a large pizza for just $22.95.
We deliver for 40 years.
Piping hot all over town.
At CCNN, we help people find a purpose, the place to start their life. And in the process, we help people just like you discover who they can become. Since 1984, CCNN has been successfully educating students for careers in a variety of fields. And in the process, we help people just like you discover who they can become in fields like pharmacy tech and medical assisting.
Contact CCNN today at 775-583-4696 or visit learnccnn.com.
At Dollar Loan Center, the word no is a good thing. No collateral required. No prepayment penalties. No application fees. And best of all, no checking account required. When banks say no, we say yes. Getting a signature loan up to $2,500 or an auto title loan up to $10,000 from us is a no-brainer. Dollar Loan Center. Lending simplified.
The Pizza Baron is celebrating over 40 years in business, and as a way to thank you, Reno and Sparks, the Pizza Baron is offering 30 wings and a large pizza for just $22.95.
We deliver for 40 years.
Piping hot all over town.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we have a great power pundit panel as always. Former State Senator Ernie Adler is here, Robin Reedy, Operations Director for Fish and former Chief of Staff to Governor Gibbons, and Eric Herzig, Professor of Political Science at UNR. So this is going to be a very interesting election cycle in Nevada because of the tax increases that were passed before. Heidi Gansert, who was not in the legislature during this past session, was not involved at all, although she had been Chief of Staff and minority leader at the legislature on the Republican side, is now running for Greg Brower's seat. She's got a challenger, Eugene Hoover, who is the chairman of the Nevada Political Action Committee for the National Federation of Independent Business. It's going to be interesting to see in the primaries how things play out between people who are perceived as being part of the tax, whether they were or not. In Ms. Gansett's case, that would be the question.
I don't know. I think she's got a lot of credibility with people here because she's been such a steady hand in terms of politics in Nevada. I think that she's going to do very well. I think I would pick her to win the primary, even though she's identified with some of the tax people.
Well, I know that, you know, she'll certainly be able to raise the money, and she certainly did a great job while in state government. But the Republican electorate in the primary may not be so happy about somebody being so identified with the governor and his tax plan.
And my big surprise has been that she's not said that she wouldn't have voted for the taxes. It's very easy to say that as a candidate, and yet she hasn't said that, and I think it's important for her to say.
Eric?
I agree. I mean, she's not answering the question, and that is the question in the Republican primary. And why she's dodging it, I don't know. I mean, she's trying to parse both sides. And, you know, I think she's going to be attacked on that issue. I think she's going to be attacked on the fact that she said she's going to keep her job, which is over $200,000 a year at the university. And they're going to look at her past association in state government in terms of what she actually did. So I do think she'll win, but I think she will face a serious challenge.
And interesting perspectives here from Ernie on the Democratic side. San Francisco votes to keep shielding immigrants from deportation officials, the whole sanctuary city situation. What's your view on this? I mean, should cities be making what formerly was the jurisdiction of the federal government, even though the federal government seems to have abandoned, with the exception of the president, taking responsibility for immigration issues?
You know, I think the government in those areas can do what they will. They have to represent the people, and the people will change elected officials if they go a different way. But there are consequences for your actions, and I'm not sure they take into account those kind of consequences, not getting elected, not having the backing of the people.
Eric?
I think this is one of those really symbolic issues that got flamed up when you had a single case in San Francisco. It's a much broader issue that gets to immigration reform, the cities. And when states on the, say, on the more conservative side say, well, we're going to send the bill to the federal government, and then the cities say, we're not going to work with the federal government, the immigration service. I mean, you get all these factors swirling around, and I don't know that all the discussion's moving the policy needle at all. And so it's okay, this is an issue. I don't know that it's a problem.
You know, the last time we saw major immigration reform started in 1977 with a committee and then ended up in 86 with Reagan passing the bill. It takes an awful long time, and it gets blown up so easily. Do you think with all the noise about immigration that's going on now that there's any chance in even the next 4 years to come to some kind of sensible immigration policy?
I think there is, because you can't just leave 11 million people in limbo. I mean,
we've been doing it for a long time.
I was going to say, yes, you can leave them in limbo.
Well, we have left them in limbo, but I mean,
they limbo at the lowest level bar.
Well, it does need to get resolved at some point in time, and I think I'm optimistic at some point Congress will act. I know that sounds Pollyanna, but
boy, you are Mr. Pollyanna today. Robin?
You know, I think we need to have immigration reform. I don't think it's going to happen in the next 5 years.
And the reality TV style of this election on both the Republican and now the Democratic side as well doesn't leave us in a position, I think, where that can come together.
So I'm going to bookend Ernie and say, no, I don't think we're going to get reform anytime soon. The two sides are way apart. But the big issue that, and Ernie brings it up, you've got 11 million people that are in this netherland, and until you address that issue, and you can talk all you want about building fences with big doors on them, I don't care, but it's like, that's an issue that has to be addressed. And right now, there's no consensus or movement on that.
Paul Ryan says that he would serve as Speaker if the Republicans unite. What do you think the odds are of it? I mean, I think it's going to happen because I think everybody looks at Paul Ryan and says, this is somebody we could all work with, but the factions of the Republican Party uniting, I don't think so much.
I don't know. I think it's kind of 50-50 whether he's going to get everybody to unite behind him. I think the Freedom Coalition, I mean, I was listening to some of the things on the radio this morning, and I don't know. I can't see some of them uniting behind him, quite frankly.
But do you think if he got to 20 out of the 40, do you think that would be enough to get him to agree?
No. And when he says, I want them to unite, I'm not even sure, does he mean the far right need to calm down, or does he mean the more moderates need to go more right? I mean, that was my initial question in my head.
And that may be the best question of all. We'll be right back.
When you're selling your home for top dollar, Marshall Realty makes the difference. More exposure, more demand. Your home marketed on TV, radio, and all over the internet. Call Marshall Realty to have your home featured on TV now.
I'm Chris Bosch. When I was sidelined with blood clots in my lung, it was serious. Fortunately, my doctor had a game plan.
Treatment with Xarelto.
Hey, guys.
Hey, finally somebody I can look up to.
Besides Arnie.
Xarelto is proven to treat and help reduce the risk of DVT and PE blood clots.
Xarelto is also proven to reduce the risk of stroke in people with AFib not caused by a heart valve problem.
For people with AFib currently well managed on warfarin, there is limited information on how Xarelto and warfarin compare in reducing the risk of stroke.
You know, I tried warfarin, but the blood testing and dietary restrictions...
Don't get me started on that. I didn't have to.
We started on Xarelto.
Nice pass.
Safety first.
Like all blood thinners, don't stop taking Xarelto without talking to your doctor, as this may increase your risk of a blood clot or stroke. While taking, you may bruise more easily, and it may take longer for bleeding to stop. Xarelto may increase your risk of bleeding if you take certain medicines. Xarelto can cause serious and, in rare cases, fatal bleeding. Get help right away for unexpected bleeding, unusual bruising, or tingling. If you have had spinal anesthesia while on Xarelto, watch for back pain or any nerve or muscle-related signs or symptoms. Do not take Xarelto if you have an artificial heart valve or abnormal bleeding. Tell your doctor before all planned medical or dental procedures. Before starting Xarelto, tell your doctor about any kidney, liver, or bleeding problems.
You know, Xarelto is the number one prescribed blood thinner in its class.
That's a big win.
It is for me.
With Xarelto, there is no regular blood monitoring and no known dietary restrictions.
Treatment with Xarelto
was the right move for us. Ask your doctor about Xarelto.
Home of the Week, brought to you by Marshall Realty. If you want your home featured on TV, call Marshall Realty today.
On our next broadcast, Reno City Councilwoman Naomi Jardine looking at what's going on in Reno. We'll see you on the next broadcast.